This is Aj McGinty, and you're listening to Bears Beyond the Gate. Enjoy.
You're listening to Bears Beyond the Gate, a Bristol Bears podcast made by fans for fans. With 2.5 season card holders at Ashton Gate, we love the club, the game, and all things Bears. Well, Miles is happy this week as Pat listens to his selection advice from the ski slopes of France and moves Max to fullback, Noah Hua to the wing, and gives Genji the starting berth at loose head. And it works, as Bristol retain the Rifles Cup by winning at King's Home for only the third time since 2006. It's an enjoyable game of rugby for both sets of fans, and the 33-24 victory means that Bristol move up to a lofty fifth position in the table thanks to Sale hammering Exeter yesterday. That's 12 tries and 85 points for the Bears since the restart, and with Newcastle up next in 3 weeks, are we now officially the wildcard team that might sneak into the playoffs? We also reinstate listeners' short, sharp summaries. We hear from a new roving reporter and take a bow to man of the match, Bernard Jansi van Rensburg, by listening to his glorious post-match interview in full before adding our thoughts on the game. I'm Pete, and I'm joined by Miles and Lee for a cheeky coffee and a bit of early morning banter. Well, I think we're going to come to you first, Lee, because the Easter schedules have caused mayhem with our pod timetabling. And I think, obviously, people can't see you because we do this as an audio. But can you explain where you are at the moment?
Yeah, first of all, I've got to say, I mean, people think, you know, we have these plush recording studios, don't they? But I'm actually, it's 8 o'clock on Monday morning. I'm sat in my van and I've got a cup of tea and I'm freezing cold, Pete. So we might need to wrap this one up nice and early.
Actually, I should say to listeners that I have actually got a YouTube channel set up for us. So I might even put this up on YouTube. And if you want to listen to the pod, you can do it on that and you can see Lee. He looks like he's living in his car. He's got a bobble hat on and he's got his gilet on. And let's hope nobody
I don't actually know what's worse, though, being sat outside in the car in the cold or having to drink tea instead of like our usual tipple of beer.
I know. I mean, I think we need to doff our cap to the Bristol Beer Factory at our first and only sponsors, and unfortunately we can't we didn't think it was fair to get them to open up at 8 in the morning and give us a couple of beers, but I think we still need to mention the Bristol Beer Factory, who've been very supportive of us since
obviously we should say Happy Easter to everyone as well.
Absolutely Happy Easter to everyone. Well, Miles, I can see that you're not in some little bedroom in an apartment in a ski resort like me. We're back at home. I take it you had a good week on the slopes.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you. The family really enjoyed the skiing. Nice. You know, problem is you've been skiing as well. It's flipping knackering. So I've actually come home for a restful Easter weekend. The kids are away with my parents. I mean, it's brilliant. I woke up, nice cup of tea, a little bit early for a podcast. And I agree with Lee, a little bit early for a beer down the tobacco factory. But
beer factory?
Sorry, the Bristol Beer Factory.
What, have you done some other sponsorship deal we don't know about?
Well, and I might also mention that I didn't even know Pete's been busy. You've been setting up YouTube as well, have you, mate?
We have got a YouTube channel.
Are there no bounds to... anyway, all good, yeah.
Miles, should we interject at this point and say, Pete, how are you recording this? Where are you two, mate? And where are you sat, more importantly?
As I said, as you pointed out quite early on, Lee, we're not in a professional recording studio. I'm actually sat on my living room floor because I've had to set up the computer on a table downstairs in the living room so I don't wake anyone up in the house. So I'm kind of sat on the floor, basically. I mean, you know, we'll do anything for our listeners, don't we, to get this pod away.
We will. We'll record anywhere, won't we? Anywhere,
absolutely.
Anytime.
Well, look, lads, I think we better get on with it. But because I've had a little bit more time to plan this than we had last week for the Saints game, when we kind of did it last minute from our bedrooms, as it were, and I'm glad we got that away because I think we needed to acknowledge what a great result it was against Saints. And of course, Lee, you made a really good point last week, is that that win against Saints was great, but we didn't want it to be an isolation. We needed to back it up. And of course, back it up we did up at Kingsholme. I mean, the only regret really for all of us is that for various reasons, we weren't able to go and watch the game. But there was, by the looks of it, having watched the whole game back on PRTV, it looked like there was a great crowd, Bristol crowd at the stadium, and you could hear the Bristoling going, and clearly the shed was silenced at the end, which in itself is a great result. But of course, we did have people at the game, and I thought, well, I've got a bit of time, so let's reinstate the short, sharp summaries. And we've had a nice bit of feedback from listeners. And we also got a little voice note from another listener, somebody who's interacted with us, Neville. And one of the reasons Nev Holmes is important, because he's actually an ex-rifleman and in the past has presented the Rifles Cup to the winning team at Ashton Gate, mainly, not Kingsholme that much. So he sent us a little voice note. So I think we'll play that as well, because he was there as well. So what I thought I'd do quickly, boys, I know is I don't want to be talking all the time, but I'll just read out our listener tweets, then we'll hear from Neville, and then we've got a little special audio that I wanted to play to you boys so that we could comment afterwards. So here we go. So first one was from Aaron, which is at Aaron I. Lee. Great atmosphere at Kingsholme and lovely fans. Magnus was majestic. I like that. It was short and sweet, with a little bit of alliteration at the end. He
love it.
I really like that. We also had one from Rob, which is at Rob2468. Great atmosphere from the travelling Bears fans. Bit sloppy in the first half, but felt we were in control most of the game. Bernie was brilliant once again. I'm sure he's obviously referring to Bernard, Jansen van Rensburg. Another big fan of the pod, John Phipps at BS15Red. Great performances all round, but BJVR and Maggie were utter titans for us yesterday. Great word, that, a titan. Really pleased that we stayed composed even when 21-7 down. We didn't give them a sniff in the second half and stayed patient and ultimately won comfortably. Onwards and upwards, come on, Briz. Yeah, very, very wise words. Carwin Jones, which is at Cones Jarwin. Great performances all round. Oh, you know what I've done? Oh, I've just copied John Phipps's one into Carwin Jones. I don't know what Carwin Jones said. I'm going to have to apologise to Carwin. I know you said something really good. Oh, I really mucked that up. Sorry, Carwin. You'll get read out next time, because I've just realised I've copied John's into yours, unless I copied yours into John's. I don't know.
Oh, dear.
Whoever did it, it was a great comment. So let's jump straight on to Richard Morse, at Richard J. Morse. No weak link. Best game in a Briz shirt for Magnus. BJVR was imperious. Great word. Forwards and backs crossed the gain line at will. AJ, outstanding. Wish we could have played like this all season. I mean, it's brilliant that the fans have had to go to the thesaurus this week, haven't they, to find
it. Yeah, I love it.
Our big friend of the pod and erstwhile outside broadcaster Nick Howell at AnyHowell66. Back to back. Back to flipping back. In a tight run, this is what is needed. Games versus Sarries and Quins will be huge, but loving the trajectory that we're on. Whoa, boys, we are an educated podcast here, aren't we? The wordage that is coming through from our fans. Cycle fan at Baxter Anthony. Well done, the Gloss fans, taking a good-natured ribbing. That's a proper rugby club. Well, I think that's fair enough. I mean, we all love the game of rugby union as well as our club. So fair play to Anthony for doffing his cap to the Gloucester fans, who obviously took it well. And also Rachel Pierce, someone we haven't heard from for a while, big fan of the pod. She said, playing the Bears way can equal danger. We were the authors of our own misfortune yesterday, gifting the Cherries at least one lovely intercept. We must be careful, ref, silly passing. Great team connect and fantastic Rensburg man of the match. So she pulled it back with a pun.
Nice.
Pulled it back with a pun. Love it, Rachel. And then, of course, I thought I'd finish with last two, which was actually poetry. We did get two poems, and I thought I'd leave those to the end. So here we go. Mark Hutton, another big fan of the pod, at Mark Hutton 1980. He did an acrostic. You've got to try and figure out what the acrostic is, boys. Okay, you concentrating?
Okay.
Here we go.
Trying.
Utmost, passion, tenacity, heroes, energy, brutally enigmatic, accurate, ruthless, scintillating.
Up the Bears, perhaps.
Up the Bears. Hey. The classic. Well done, Mark.
Well done, Miles.
And then well done, Miles. Well done. And finally, our last poem was from big friend of ours that we met that time when we all went down. I can't remember which game it was. And the Bath game, wasn't it? John Wood at John273Boy. And here we go. This is a proper poem. The shed dead, come the end. Interceptions, forgotten in elation. The forwards brutal, resistance futile. The Bears, victorious. Cherry crush, girt lush.
Oh, brilliant.
I love it.
I mean, boys, that's class. That is rugby and poetry literally coming together, isn't it?
Oh, my God. That's a work of art.
Yeah, those two words in the same sentence, but love it. Yeah.
And then just to finish off, as I said, we did have a voice note from Nev Holmes, who is a rifleman himself, and he sent us a little voice note, and let's play that now.
Hey, boys. Nev here. Great fan of the pod. Love what you're doing. First time to King's Home today. And really enjoyed the experience. Really welcoming and clearly a proper rugby country. I'm not sure it was ever really in doubt. Albeit we're under the pump slightly in the first half. I think if you look at territory possession and metres made, we probably had the better than a couple of breakaway tries led to a probably disappointing score time at half time. Come the second half, I think we were really going to turn it on. And I was a little bit worried about the bomb squad that they had coming on. Some great names in the second half, but Big Jan and others really held them up. And then we were able to turn the screw and got a bonus point win, which is fantastic. And as a rifleman, I've presented a couple of times. It's great that we retained the Rifles Cup. So come on, Briz.
Okay, lads. Well, that was great from Nev. Kind of reinforced pretty much what all the boys said. So couple of, well, I say boys. That's what Rachel's going to be happy about, actually.
I'm just going to pull you up on that.
Yeah, sorry, Rachel. I mean, before we get into it, and we have a little treat as well that I wanted to play. Any comments on all of those? Just very brief comments on those listener posts. Lee, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I just wanted to pick up on, I mean, it was all brilliant work as always. I think our listeners now have kind of give us a level of expectation that it is, they've set the bar high and they continue to achieve those levels, don't they? But I just wanted to pick up on, the talk about the Gloucester fans, because I did the post article for today, and I mentioned actually the fact that, you know, how hard it is, first of all, to win at King's Home. But it's one of those places, I think, like if you haven't been to King's Home, you have to go. It's just such a rugby place. And it was great, you know, a few of our listeners had said about, you know, how good the banter was after, because, you know, I've been there a few times and I've had to be on the other side of that banter. And, but it is one of those places, but there's nothing nasty about it. It is just pure rugby banter. And it's such a brilliant place to go. And for us to go there and win, it's so upsetting that, you know, none of us were there. But I just wanted to pick up on that. It's such a brilliant place to go and watch rugby.
Yeah. Well said, Lee. Well said. And I was quite pleased that it was a close-ish game, because Gloucester have been like us down in the dumps for early in the season and have picked themselves up and obviously got themselves some silverware. So, you know, I was glad that it was a good game. It wasn't a shellacking, or it wasn't a one-sided sort of game. So fair play to Gloss. And, you know, they seem to be picking up, and there's some great players there. And nicely done for the fans. Miles, any comments on the listeners you want to make?
I thought it was fantastic. You know, the expectation now is for our listeners that you go to an away game with the following items. Your ticket, obviously, your phone, your wallet, and a quill to write some poetry down post-game. I mean, this is fantastic stuff for the fans. And we'd just like to thank them all for sort of writing in and giving us some comments. And, yeah, we'll chat about the sort of game in a minute. But, yeah, brilliant stuff.
Well, one of the themes that came out of those listener comments was the performance of a number of players, but in particular, the official man of the match, our very own South African Bernard Jansi van Rensburg. And he did a post-match interview straight after the game, which I watched and I just thought, this is so good. It's so textbook that we need to include this into our pod. So I did a bit of cheeky screen recording and changed it to an MP3. I know you boys don't understand what I'm saying there, but it was I've managed to get it. And the thing is, I'm also, as I think Lee might know, I'm a big fan of another podcast with the round ball called Football Clichés, which is a brilliant podcast. Any football fans out there that don't listen to it, you should listen to it. They basically dissect the language of football every single week, and it is so funny. And I've got to say that the Jansi van Rensburg post-match was an absolute textbook cliche ridden summary of the game, and just the fact that it was coming out of the mouth of a bloke with a massive mullet and a South African accent, and just what a guy. I mean, he just looks unique. And so I thought, we've got to put this into the pod for those people that didn't hear it. So let's have a quick listen now, and then we can comment perhaps on the cliches afterwards. Here we go.
Bernard, congratulations, player of the match. You could tell by your forehead there's a couple of bumps and bruises. What was it like out there today?
Yeah, no, definitely it was a tough battle out there today. Kloster did not make it easy for us. You know, it was a really tough first 60. But yeah, credit to the boys, you know, they stuck to their guns. And yeah, that last two tries we scored in sort of in the 70th minute to sort of take it out of reach for Gloucester. Yeah, it's all credit to the fight that the boys put in for the first 60 minutes.
And Pat Lam's been talking about six test matches essentially since you've come back from this break. What are you going to do for the next 2 weeks to get ready for the final four games?
Yeah, we said obviously this last six games is really important to us. You know, we said we're going to take one game at a time, and yeah, last week and this week's pretty good results for us. So now rest up probably for this first week, get stuck into the second week, and yeah, hopefully we're ready for Newcastle at home, another test match at home.
And how was it crossing the whitewash? Always a good moment. You almost thought that you couldn't believe it when you broke through at the end there.
Yeah, it's my first drive for Bristol, so it's pretty amazing. I wish it was at home, in front of the home ground, but yeah, it's always amazing crossing a whitewash for your team, the white line for your team. But yeah, it's all the work from the boys on the inside to sort of create that space for me on the outside.
Okay, well, look, there you go. What a guy Jansi is. He's so straight down the line. He doesn't have any airs and graces, but he has been hewn from rugby cliches. I don't know, boys, if you've managed to listen to it, but I mean, the summary of the cliches in that was he started with the customary yeah-no when asked a question. and the customary yeah, and then, of course, went straight into the fact that it was a tough battle. Because always military terms, particularly with this game, the Rifles Cup, is always important when it comes to sport. Tough first 60. I mean, he wasn't wrong there, and it was a tough first 60. But of course, as he is a team man, he immediately had to give credit to the boys. But because he obviously it was the Rifles Cup, he said that they stuck to their guns, which I thought was so clever. And then he then kind of doubled down on that by saying all credit to the fight that the boys had put out in the first 60. And I mean, it was just brilliant. And then, of course, he referred to the fact that Pat himself, a man of cliche, had said that we've now got six test matches in the restart. And as Jansi rightly says, you've got to take one game at a time.
Of course,
he then alluded to the fact that the Newcastle game is now another test match on the horizon. and then, of course, we've talked a little bit about Jansi being a bit like Will Hurrell, making great line breaks, but never actually scoring. Yeah. And of course, this was a momentous moment on Saturday because he scored our final try. And of course, he broke into a little smile and said, first try. But of course, because he's an absolute pro, he said, I wish it had been at home, always in front of the home supporters. I mean, what a legend. And he said, of course, it's always amazing crossing the whitewash, the white line for your team. I mean, if it had been Robbie Fowler back in the day, you might be questioning what he was talking about. But Lee will know what I'm talking about there. And of course, he said, because he is an absolute team man, he finished off by saying, it wasn't about him. It was all the work from the boys on the inside created the space on the outside for him, even though he did break about three tackles and deft footwork. So, boys, I mean, I just thought what a great post-match. And Lee, I can see you're chuckling away in your van there. The dog walker's walking outside and wondering what the hell you're doing.
It's just a couple of things I wanted to pick up on, because I haven't heard it yet. So I haven't heard the interview yet, but I just wanted to ask you, Pete, because one thing that I always hear from footballers is before, when they're asked the initial question, the first thing they say is, listen. And did he interject a listen at all?
He didn't do a listen. That's why it wasn't perfect.
Oh, okay.
And he didn't talk about your Zach Mercers, your Ollie Thorleys, your Lewis Ludlams. He didn't do that kind of plural thing either. So he's still got a bit to learn. But I mean, it was a South African post. It was so straight down the line. But yeah, it's either listen or look. And then also the other classic is they ask the question and then answer it themselves. Was I happy with scoring my first try? Yes, I was happy. Was it credit to the boys? Yes, it was credit to the boys. He hasn't quite got it yet, but it was a great effort.
But one thing I will say, though, is that I've heard that he hates doing the interviews. So if that's the case, then he probably feels quite a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Which is, we've never been in that position, but, you know, we've been in front of, Points West cameras and stuff like that, haven't we, over the years? And it's bloody nerve-wracking, isn't it? So for somebody who doesn't like doing it, you know, full credit to him. But what I will say is, like, he's playing so well. He's up in front of the cameras every week with Man of the Match awards. So it's a catch-22.
What a ledge. What about you, Miles? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I thought he played brilliantly. I mean, the interview was great. I mean, the poor chap, he looked like he'd been sort of in a ring with Mike Tyson. He had a bruised sort of face, a cut at the top of his head, sweating galore, because it was a sunny afternoon, wasn't it? And you're right. He tries to sort of smile, but it's funny. He hates it. I can tell he absolutely hates it. Sort of smiling and being credited. So that's why he was deflecting any opportunity, wasn't he? The fact that he played such a brilliant performance. He was knocking off tackles. I mean, I was chatting with the Duchess watching it last night. He's almost like the semi of last season, taking down 3-4 players. But better ball control and passing and skill. So, yeah, I mean, fair enough he doesn't like interviews, but it was just a classic and he's going to be interviewed again. So, yeah, we'll get more cliches. I mean, did he mention we talked about? But
no.
That would have just topped it off for me.
The we talked about thing only comes out when we lose, because it's like,
true.
Well, we talked about it, but we didn't do it. We don't, you know, we have a whole different set. Cliches when you win. This is the point. Lee, you've got your hand up.
I was just going to say, I mean, obviously, you know, Saffers are more adept at snarling than smiling anyway, aren't they? Everyone knows that
true.
Across the world.
yeah,
but actually, boys, I think when you look at it, he was smiling. And I've got to say, one thing I noticed, he's got a perfect set of teeth. They're absolutely, I reckon he had a brace when he was a kid down in South Africa, wherever he comes from. If you took away the mullet, took away the accent, you wouldn't think he was a Saffer at all. So fair play to him. It was good. But anyway,
the weirdest things, Pete.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. Maybe I'll edit that bit out. I'm not quite sure what I was trying to say. But what we do know, and Miles has said this, is that it was a man of the match performance from Yancey. But of course, you don't win games by just one player playing well. So Lee, I know you've watched it, possibly just the highlights. I mean, what was your general kind of impression of the game? Because that is interesting to get an impression from the highlights relative to watching the whole thing, which me and Miles have done, but also when fans are there. So what, from the highlights point of view, what do you think?
Well, I mean, the one thing I would say, I was getting score notifications on my phone. And I was worried at one point, because I think we were three tries to one down. And I kind of thought, oh, no, I haven't experienced King's Home before. You know, I just thought generally teams don't come back when Gloucester are in front. The pack's normally dominant. And I, you know, from the scores that were coming in initially, I was thinking, oh, this could be a bit of a pasting. But I think as John Phipps had said, you know, full credit that we hung in there. And my impression was that, you know, it was a very close game. But then having said that, we did throw a few passes, you know, which kind of gifted them a couple of tries. So I think it was a bit, probably a bit deceiving, you know, my impression of it to actually what was happening on the field.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I watched the highlights first when I came back. Then I watched the whole thing yesterday, and I didn't quite realise how close it was, really, right up to pretty much the 67th minute when finally Magnus Bradbury went over for his second try. As I'm sure Jansi van Rensburg might say next time, Maggie bagged a brace. but having said that, Miles, you watched it all the way through.
Yeah.
The second half, we didn't score for ages, but we always looked quite in control because we had a lot of possession and territory. So I can see how fans felt that we were looked like we were going to win, but clearly it took a while.
Well, I think on the other, let's just flip the coin. I think Lee's absolutely right. Not many teams go to King's Home and win, and we've had a pretty bad record in the past. Yeah, and for fans who haven't seen the game, we literally, from half time until 67 minutes, it was pretty much just sort of stalemate. The Gloucester made it extremely difficult for us to get that try on 67 minutes. And even when we did, we went ahead. They never flipping gave up. Even going up to the sort of 80th minute, they would have had to get a converted try and a penalty to get the win. But they were phenomenal. And despite the possession statistics, like something like Bristol was 61%, Gloucester 39%, you look at that and you think, you know, it was such a close game in there. And it was a crazy last 5 minutes with turnover, end-to-end stuff. Really, really difficult win in the end. And, you know, Gloucester didn't lie down, but I thought it was just fantastic. Great to get the win.
Yeah, I mean, when you go back to the start, I mean, they scored. We started well. They scored first. It was a kind of opportunist try. I think their winger kind of chipped it forward and then it bounced up, but it was close. And he did really well to get it down. It kind of came from nothing, which was a bit disappointing. But then we then got back into it and then we scored and Fitz scored. I think it was there was some quite nice from yards from Stevie. It went to Genji. Genji offloaded off the floor to JVR. And then JVR popped it to Fitz, who was on the support. And at 7-all, I looked at that and thought, well, that's about right. You know, we had dominated, I think, the first few bits. But then, bizarrely, we then gave this stupid intercept try. And it was probably the one bad thing that Adj did. It was a bit of a wild sort of mispass that Santi Carreras, fair play, international player, quality. And of course, because the pass was was aimed at Max Malins, who'd broken into the line, there was no fullback. So, I mean, it was almost like Carreras just kind of walked it in from almost the whole pitch. Fair play to him. So we kind of gifted them a well. And then they scored again. And their hooker, and that was a good story. Their hooker scored on the wing. And I was watching it thinking, who's that winger? And this is the guy that had only just been signed like on a temporary for 2 weeks because they've got a real hooker crisis. So fair play to him. And suddenly, before we know it, we're 21-7 down, having looked quite good. But obviously, we did manage to get back into it with a great Ogre try. I've got to say, another blind ball. The footwork from Ogre. I mean, we'll talk about performances in a minute, but I think that was, you know, testament to his development. Absolutely. Their fullback just went the wrong way and he sliced through him. But yeah, Lee, I mean, so 21-14 at half time, we were, you know, it felt a bit unfair, but they were only scored three tries. But I don't know, having watched that, and I knew the result, but I would have thought if I'd been there, I think I would have felt quite confident, even though we were down. Lee?
You said you watched the game back.
Yeah.
But Did we not score through Bradbury just before half time?
Oh yeah, we did. Actually, you're right. Sorry.
But the one thing I was going to say, Pete, is just prior to that, Randall got an interception, didn't he? Freddie Clark.
Yes.
And I think that was a massive turning point in the match for me.
Yeah.
Because Max Malins was fantastic in defence. Right. There's no doubt Freddie Clark should have offloaded it to Josh Hathaway, and Gloucester would have been in with another score.
Yeah.
And then at that point, then we could have been struggling.
But Max Malins, not only a brilliant try-saving tackle, he got over the ball and we got possession back. So I think then that kind of shifted the momentum. And then Bradbury scoring, as he did, of his brilliant work by the forwards, wasn't it? Scoring just before half-time with Fitz. It was a great break from Fitz, wasn't it, through the middle?
Well, the interesting thing
and
is...
And I just think...
Yeah. Carry on, sorry.
I just think momentum shifts that quickly. You know, the momentum shifted that quickly just prior to half, and all of a sudden, instead of going Stang.
Yeah, you're right. I should have read my notes. Sorry, because I'm looking at them now. You're right, that Freddie Carp break, and he should have passed it. I mean, that was a last-iron try for them with that winger. But Max got him from behind. Then we got the ball back, I think. And then we got forward a bit, and Fitz did that great. He did a break straight from a ruck. And it was that one where he scooped the ball up with one hand. He looked like he was guarding the ruck, and then he scooped it and ran. And what he did was brilliant. He managed to wait for the support. He kind of went sideways, and he popped it to Gabs, who then popped it to Bradders, who powered over. And it was, you're right, it was an absolute point swing there. We could have been seven down, and we got five back. It was a bit annoying because then Adge missed the conversion. It hit the post. And it could have, I mean, I almost wrote down it was a 14 point swing, but it wasn't quite because we missed the, because they would have definitely got their conversion because it was under the post. So yeah, you're right. It was a really, really good finish to the half. So we were only, 24-19 at half time.
Well, we're going to let you off, Pete, because it is 8 o'clock on Monday, Bank Holiday Monday morning. So to be honest, it's normally me and Miles that make the mistake. So, you know.
So, Miles, do you want to double down on my mistake by saying something insightful now? Like
No. I mean, it was a great first half. You're right. I think if so we went in 24-19 with three tries apiece at that point. But I know Gloucester was slightly in the ascendancy, despite that sort of Bradbury try. And I think if I would have been a slightly nervous Bristol Bears fan if I'd have been at Kingsholm on Saturday afternoon. And I think it could have gone either way at half time, but we'll come on to chat about the second half. And luckily it didn't.
Yeah, I mean, the second half was interesting because, it was a funny one. There was nothing scored. Gloucester didn't score again. And that was a bit, and I think that was testament to our kind of domination of territory and possession. But we kind of, you know, we knocked on the door a lot, but then, you know, every time that we were close, there was a turnover, there was a, you know, maybe a missed pass or whatever. And in the past, that has been our kind of downfall, and it's depressed us a little bit. But we seem to just have that steely confidence that Pat has talked about a little. He has talked about the fact that we needed to be more cohesive. We needed to play without fear, but we also needed to play as a team and get back in position when mistakes and don't let our heads go down. I thought that was a textbook second half of doing that. You know, we kept playing, we kept plugging away. I thought our kicking game was brilliant. We kicked when we needed to. We varied it. We ran when we needed to, like the old Bears way, but we didn't take too many risks. And I just thought it was always going to come. And Gloucester eventually succumbed. Yeah, Lee.
Yeah, I was just going to just back up what you've just said then, Pete, because I think the reason that steely confidence that you say has returned is because we're playing the Bears way now. It's, you know, that's the ethos that's been set. And I think there's more confidence in, you know, I'm not even going to knock the interceptions because I think that we've got to take that on the chin almost because I'd rather, you know, I said weeks ago, I'd rather we played the Bears way and, you know, played this attacking rugby that we were all expecting and looking forward to. And I think sometimes, like, I do feel that that's why the confidence is returning, because the players know they don't have to kick the ball away so much now. You know what I mean? They can keep the ball in hand, and mistakes will come from that. But I do feel that's the best way for us to play.
Yeah, I mean, and we're playing so cohesively, like the forwards and the backs are linking so well together. But at the same time, our set piece is solid. Our line out wasn't perfect, but it was, you know, good enough. And of course, we seem to get that balance between grunt and graft and flair.
Yeah.
And that, you know, if I was, I don't know, It's a difficult one, but if I was other teams in the league looking at Bristol, thinking they've got their injury list sorted, they've hardly had to integrate any England players, they've got an England international playing probably the best he has, but wasn't playing for England in Sinclair, I'd be worried. I'd be worried if I was some of the other teams, thinking that Bristol were making a bit of a charge. And of course, you know, another game at Falcons, you know, you'd like to think we'd win that game at home. Suddenly we're right in the mixer. Then we have an away trip to Leicester. Leicester are hot and cold. I mean, obviously, you know.
Beaten by Gloucester last week, didn't they?
Yeah, it's not an easy place to go, obviously, Leicester. No. Saracens at home. I mean, Saracens run hot and cold. I mean, they, you know, but we know that'll be tough. And obviously, I do wonder whether there's some sort of kind of rugby poetry in the offing, that we go to more rugby kind of, what am I trying to say? We're going to Quinn's on the last day of the season. And if we're going to Quinn's and we need something from Quinn's at the Stoop, and you know, that could be a nice little narrative. That we finally kind of got back to where we were 4 years ago.
Do you mean like poetic justice, maybe?
Yeah. We could put Bristol finally to bed, didn't we?
We're simply going to put it to bed. But
no.
And we have put Bristol to bed, you know, in attempts that we've beaten Quinn's since. But if it was to kind of win there, to kind of get a home semi or something like that, you know, and then not have to play them in the home semi, that would be good too.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, we're kind of digressing a little bit. That's my fault. Boys, let's just pick out some players and performances let's look on the positive. So Miles, you kick off. Anyone that tickled your Duke-ish fancy?
Absolutely. I tell you, I'm going to mention, you know, obviously, you know, JVR got man of the match, but I think equally there was a few other contenders for it, really. I think, like we've always almost already said, Max Malins played an absolute blinder. His little chip through, his ability to see little gaps was phenomenal. I mean, we'll let him off that he was wearing his tights. You know, he's got soft legs and he doesn't like playing on 4G pitches. And he had a shave as well. He shaved his beard off. So maybe that's why he had a couple of extra metres speed on the Gloucester players. So, like, a big tick for Malins, I think, in the backs, him with JVR. And I think, you know, there wasn't really a player in the backs who had a bad game. I mean, Heward was great. He almost had a little chip and chase and scored, didn't he, of his own run. But, you know, a great covering tackle by Varney. And perhaps you boys can chat about the forwards, but I thought, you know, interceptions, like, well, that's bye for bye. If we're going to play the Bears way, a passing game, then that's what will happen. And maybe we need to tighten up a little bit in those passes if we're going to go and play against some of the top teams. But backs
risk and reward, Miles, risk and reward.
Yeah.
What about you, Lee? Can you add to that?
Yeah, well, if I'm going to take the forwards, I mean, I'd say the front three were brilliant again. I mean, O'Gray stood out for me. Like you say, he's, you know, he's not had a lot of game time, but he is one of those players. I think when he's got a few matches under his belt, he can really do something for us. But I just thought between 5 and 8, I thought they were all outstanding. And I think they really kind of took apart their opponents in the same positions. And I guess Bradbury, I mean, 2 tries, he probably stood out of those 4. But I thought they were all fantastic. Luatua, again, just being the oil that, you know, the glue that we need. And, you know, and I thought there was only one player that I would have said that from the Gloucester team that outdid our position. And I have to admit, he's a great player, but Santi Carreras, I thought, was outstanding for them. And I think he probably shaded AJ in that respect. I also think the front three for Gloucester were pretty good as well.
Yeah.
But if I was going to pick someone, I'd go for Bradbury.
Yeah. And you know, given what happened to Scotland in the Six Nations, that they underachieved a little bit again. I mean, I think, you know, you wonder, and I know what there is speculation that he might go back up north at the end of the season, but we don't know. I'd like to think that he's played himself, you know, into Gregor Townsend's thoughts. And interestingly, Borthwick was at the game yesterday, wasn't he? And I was looking through our players and thinking he'd probably come to watch Randall probably, and check on maybe Genji and all that sort of stuff. But he must have looked, I'd like to think Borthwick would look at some of the English players that we had on view, the likes of Batley, the likes of Dunn, the likes of Fitzharding, even, I mean, Jimmy Williams. Is he any different to Fraser Dingwall? Is he, you know, I know Ollie Lawrence has got the centre pair, but you look at Jimmy Williams and think he can't be far off in a decent English inside centre. You know, how much better is Fraser Dingwall, who got in the Six Nation Cup, than Jimmy Williams? And I mean, it's great for Borthwick now because he's got some real competition, and it'd be interesting to see what this summer tour pulls out. I mean, summer tour to New Zealand is not going to be tough, but I think my only caveat on Randall is that Jack Van Portfleet played for Leicester, come back after a large injury, scored a great breakaway try. And I do wonder whether that will just get him straight back into the squad. Oh. But I think Randall to me is, I mean, funnily enough, ever since he's had kids, as we discussed last week, has come back full of verve and vigour. And as we said, you're in that honeymoon Goldilocks period at the moment, because it will get worse. I can't imagine his wife would be too pleased if he goes off to New Zealand.
Yeah, he'd get plenty of sleep, wouldn't he?
go back to your thing about Carreras. I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, that shows how good he did play, because I think it was Adge was absolutely outstanding. So we're talking about two absolute operators playing at the absolute highest level. And probably the only thing that shaded it was the fact that Adge threw the pass to Carreras and he scored. But I mean, I thought McGinty again, how we missed him early in the season. I mean, he just has that ability to make half a yard here, make a break, strong in the tackle. He just makes everybody play better around him. And I think it is testament to how good Carreras was. I mean, just a couple of things. I just thought when you said that Luatu is the glue, I actually thought lubricant was a good word.
Yes. Yeah. That's probably better.
He's lubricant, isn't he? It's there's a number of things that Stephen Luatu could be, but lubricant maybe. But I do think we've got a real balance in that back row at the moment. Harding, Luatu, Bradbury, they're playing well. They're so cohesive. And, you know, we've talked about, I just can't help laughing every time I say that. We talked about Dan Thomas not getting anywhere the squad at the moment. And actually it's quite hard to see how he could be, because I suppose the only option is he could be a bencher, but something's gone on with Dan Thomas because he's not injured and he's not on.
Yeah.
But there always has been. It seems to be an ongoing thing. But, you know, as to coin another cliche, I mean, Pat's got a nice problem to have. He's got a lot of players to choose from. And does he rotate? Does he keep, you know? And I think going back to the lubricant word, what I think about the back row was very fluid. There was a very fluid.
Yeah, it was.
And the whole forward was fluid. And I should also, I think we need to doff our cap to Genji as well. I thought he was absolutely outstanding again. Not just the grunt, but I mean, making breaks, offloading off the floor. And there was a glorious inside pass that he did in the second half I can't remember who it was to two, but he popped it inside. We nearly scored from it. And I just thought he's come back a new man. So fair play. And again, Sinks. I mean, people will be cynical with Sinks. And of course, this week it was announced that the best kept secret, or the worst kept secret, I should say, that he was going off. He put a nice thing out on Twitter to kind of acknowledge that he'd struggled. And I think, you know, he's a good bloke and he sinks. And I think he's a man.
Yeah.
And I think, ironically, he is playing his best. It's almost like he's got a burden off his shoulders now. And I mean, some cynical people say, well, you know, he only started playing because he knew a contract was coming. But I think fair play to him. He's a proper, and I hope he gets back into international standings. It may be a little bit late because I think he's gone past 30 now, but he's still he can still do a job, and I thought he was great as well. So, boys, it was really good. It's really nice to have two. Not only is it good for the team to win well the second time, like you said last week, Lee, that we had. So it's nice for the pod to be able to talk about a positive thing.
Yeah.
The second time in a row as well. I mean, that's three if you count the Bath one as well. So,
well, it's nice. How much more? Sorry, Miles.
No, carry on, mate.
I was going to say, how much more positive is it all round? You know, all round the club now, the last, you know, since the restart, everyone just, it just feels like we are gaining a bit of momentum collectively as a club, as a support, as a fan base again. And it's just been lovely because we have been, you know, we've been through some ups and downs, haven't we? So
Well, it was only January. The dark night in Galway, I think, was a big turning point, wasn't it? And that was after that, Steve Lansdowne, you know, got involved. And he must be sitting in the Guernsey, stroking his little white hat like that, thinking, you know what? I know what I'm doing. Yeah, I mean, you know, we have to doff our cap to the input that Steve Lansdowne's put into this renaissance. So fair play, well, Steve.
I think there were a few photos, weren't there, from the club of him actually at Gloucester, wasn't he, congratulating the players. So spring has sprung. He's got his little – he's dusted off his – well, sorry. He's got his little butler to dust off the private jet and come over and go up to Kingsholm. But you're right. There's a little spring in the step of all the Bristol players, aren't there? They've had their Easter lamb this weekend now. They've got 3 weeks off. You know, let's hope that we've got no European sort of competitions to worry about. Let's hope they get a little holiday, come back. A few injuries we may have seen on Saturday, like Brad. Batley got a bit of a rib injury, didn't he, to be honest with you? And Dunn came off. You know, so we've got 3 weeks for the strength and conditioning and the physios to get those little niggles sorted. And we might even have more players back available in 3 weeks. It's just fantastic for us. I mean, you know, and I think one fan highlighted on Twitter that actually now in the Premiership table, Bristol had the most points scored in the whole of the Premiership. So... Mm-hmm. Things are really looking up with the final stretch.
Yeah, Lee, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I just want to say, actually, we should congratulate the medical staff because, you know, we had so many players out, didn't we? That we had players there that we thought, you know, might not even be back for a long, long time. And so the medical staff must have been absolutely working tirelessly, you know, behind the scenes to get these guys back and fit. And I mean, all of a sudden the picture looks completely different, doesn't it, to a few weeks ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the fact that we've got a winnable home game to come, albeit in a couple of weeks, is also grist to our positive mill. So
yes.
I think it's so close now, the Prem. It is amazing how close it is. I don't know whether we can. I think I've actually got to go with Jantzi van Rensburg and say we take every game as it comes, and let's not speculate on finishing positions. Let's just take every game as it comes, and then let's see where we are when we have to travel to the Stoop on the last game of the season, and maybe think about it then.
I think
that's good, boys. A couple of other things. I think you, Miles, there's a couple of things we're going to finish off by mentioning. And one of them was, we've mentioned six. Oh, no, Batley. I was going to say that the thing about Batley being injured was that there was something came up in midweek in the socials about he was the only player in the Premiership up to this weekend who had played every single minute of every single Premiership game, which is an extraordinary record. And then, of course, he inevitably gets injured and then has to go off. And so it was a bit of a shame. But, that's extraordinary, really, as a forward. He's played every minute up to the point he got injured on. I mean, and he's the sort of player that gets, you know, he does a lot of things as well in a game, doesn't he? It's, I think, fair play. The other thing was the Red Roses. I think, Miles, did you want to mention, obviously, Ashton?
It's fantastic.
Issue that they schedule a massive game of rugby at Ashton Gate at the same time of a Bristol game in Gloucester. So, of course, there was a dilemma for some of our fans who are dual seasoning holders. And I know some people went, you know, a lot of people went to Ashton Gate. Well, nearly 20,000 went to
Ashton. Well, absolutely. I bumped into a friend in Aldi who just come out the ground. So it was a phenomenal. I mean, there was only, sort of, I think, the top of the Lansdowne empty. But she said it was just, you know, a great crowd down there, really noisy. There were, I think, between England and Wales, potentially about between 6 and 9 Bristol Bears women's players featuring. I mean, you know, a shellacking. We'd like that. We'd describe that win, wouldn't we, against Wales, something like 46-10. It's just great. Yeah, scheduling, not ideal. We would have loved to have gone, but we weren't back from our holidays in time. But just great for Ashton, great, and great for the city to host that.
Yeah, fair play to the decision makers. I mean, it makes sense to have a Wales-England game on the border of Wales and England. And I think a lot of Welsh people came over to support. And I went down. Actually, I didn't tell you this, boys. I nipped into the Bristol Beer Factory because I just got back and I had to go shopping at Aldi, and I nipped into the Bristol Beer Factory and that whilst the second half of the Roses was going on. Mm. And then did my shopping in Aldi. I had a quick pint. I had a free pint as well. I forgot to tell you.
Well, I got,
they gave us a free one, which is
probably over the road in Aldi. We didn't get a message, did we, Lee?
Well, the thing
not
was,
at all miles.
Yeah, but the point is, boys, I was supposed to be shopping and I nipped there first. It was because actually I wanted to go in to tell them that I didn't think we could record on Sunday. Okay. So it was a business meeting that I had.
He's done a little Harry Randall, hasn't he, Miles?
Yeah, as I said, his missus isn't listening to the
podcast. It was a little tap and go. It was a little tap and go. And then anyway, I then went shopping. But when I came out of Aldi, the game had finished and there was loads of people in North Street. It was a nice, a lot of Welsh fans and stuff. So it was good. Well, boys, unless you think of anything else, I think we need to call it a day because we've got the rest of Bank Holiday Monday to enjoy. I do appreciate you getting up. One thing I would say is that for people who do listen to this, you know, please send us any comments. We've got our email address, bearsbeyondthegate@gmail.com. And we do get emails from people telling us stuff. We do like interaction in Twitter, now known as X. We're pushing stuff on our Instagram. I still think we need to have an off-season marketing and promotion strategy meeting when the season finishes. Mm. But also we look forward to seeing people at the next game, which is a Sunday afternoon, a Bears game against Falcons in 3 weeks' time. But boys, unless you've got anything else to say, I think we might have to call it today.
One little thing. Obviously, if fans don't want to wait that long, there is another Bristol Bears women's game in between that 3 weeks. That's, I think, on, is it Sunday the 14th?
The 14th, yeah.
Yes.
And it's a big game. It's at Shaftesbury Park, but it's against Gloucester Hartbury, who are
Who we lost to, when they came there last time.
Only lost to them in the last quarter at their place. Yeah. So, and we do know that the women have got everything to play for as well for a home semi final. So yeah, get down Shaftesbury Park.
Well, it's a perfect time to do it, as we say. The men's haven't got a game, so what better opportunity to get up to Shaftesbury and watch the women's batter Gloucester again?
Let's hope so.
I mean, why not? Okay, boys, well, I think we'll leave it there. So thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great bank holiday and bank holiday week. And as we always say, after three, one, two, three.
Come on, Bears.
Come on, Bears.